this, after 1984, has been an interesting moment to think and remember all of the ways in which the politics of religion, the politics of culture matter, right, in an everyday way. And to think about also the, as you saw in the video, the kind of responses of people around the world, the way in which people are connected, diasporas, transnational connections that put people together. And my work has been very much focused on that. Sort of how do we produce nationalisms? How do we produce community across networks, across media networks, technological networks, networks of community and culture? So I've worked for many years on that as well. I'm not a scholar of religion, so I will leave it to the other panelists, Nikki in particular, to talk about some of the religious parts that are important here. But to talk about sort of questions that I engage with every day as a feminist, and worrying about sort of who represents us, who speaks for us. Is there an us? Is there a community? How are the boundaries of a community made? Who forms the us? Who says you belong, you don't belong, you're a Sikh, you're not a Sikh? How does that happen? And I sort of think historically about it and how that shifts and changes over periods of time, and how perhaps 1984 became a moment that was really a horrific event, and what that resulted in was some people became more involved in the Sikh community. Some people who hadn't had turbans or beards, some men started to keep them. People were dislocated, displaced. To this day, so many of the women who were given some flats out of Trilok Puri and live now in Trilok Bihar are still struggling for money. The Modi government has given them some more money now. But how they have lived is an important question for us to investigate. So I think about all of these questions of culture, community, politics, and diaspora. So the first question that that I pose for you is, who makes the community, right? What are the archives of the community? This video you saw is an important part of making the archive, right? As somebody says, you create it. You put some things together. You gather fragments of memory, oral histories, documentation. But there are other ways in which an archive is made. All the voices who are forgotten in the archives, right? All the voices not there. These are very select ways in which memories are produced. Memory is a process of selection. So our work as feminists, for the most part, is to think about, always to think about, who's forgotten? Who's excluded? Who's taking power? The question of power is critical. Who presents themselves as more powerful than others? What are the hierarchies in our communities? How do the hierarchies matter? What do they do? Right? What work do they do? So these questions have been really important for me to think about the archive as well, and to think always about, how can I expand the archive? What can I do to make that archive larger than it is? Bring in all those questions, these issues, those voices that are left out of the archive. Those voices that are, don't behave. The voices that are, annoying. The voices that are fussy. The voices that people say, oh, just go away. All of those people for feminist practice are really, really important to understand. Right? I say in my classes, we think about politics from below always. It's not politics from above all the time. Second question that's really important for thinking about feminist, Sikhi feminist practice is the archive, not the archive, just the memory. The question of memory. There's a lot of work in scholarly, a great deal of scholarly work on memory. The question of what is memory? What happens when people memorialize? Whether should we think about it as traumatic, right? Trauma studies is a particular school of thought that begins to think about how a particular event is recognized or remembered later, in the later period? And what are the sort of questions about how trauma is embedded, perhaps in physical ways, embedded in our brains, how it's embedded in our bodies and our gestures? How is trauma existed at different moments of time? How does it emerge? And one of the most interesting things I think about 1984 is also the kind of ways in which artists are trying to deal with that traumatic moment of trauma. And that trauma, the moment, was very different for different people. People who were in diaspora, people who were there, people who were in Punjab, people who were in different parts of the world, right? How they dealt in a different kind of distance from the moment and the events of the riots as well. People in different regions of Delhi, right? Different parts of India. So the question about memory is really then critical. So who's remembered, who's forgotten, whose memories circulate? The issue of virality is really critical, and in sort of scholarly work, you always have to ask yourself, what becomes viral? It's a huge issue. Is it ideology that makes something viral, or power, or what makes some things circulate more than others? Right? And that's a question to ask ourselves always. So one of the ways in which power has been thought about, just in terms of women in relation to the state and nation, is sort of the question of where Sikh women are. Where are they in history? Where are they in politics? Right? And where are they in sort of academic scholarship? And that's an interesting case of sort of one way to think about that case is to think about who's visible. Much of the question of women, Sikh women, emerges through questions of violence, right? And particular forms of violence over others. So the particular kinds of violence that you remember is the violence of events like 1984, for instance. The events that produce women as widows, the women who were sexually assaulted. And that is a long, long history of Sikh women. And that's sort of one way in which we are allowed to remember these women, right, as victims of a certain particular kinds of violence. And that violence is also framed by a notion of women that is very patriarchal, that women can only be victims of violence, their property, right? Their violence matters, that particular violence matters, right? I'm interested also in what might be called slow violence. Rob Nixon has thought about slow violence as environmental violence, the long kind of durée, the long history of violence that you don't see, that is silent, that's there ever, all the time. How does one think about slow violence as opposed to the kind of eruptive event violence, right? And the eruptive violence is important too because it galvanizes politically, it does a lot of work. But the slow violence is interesting for feminists because it's there all the time. It's unrecognized often. It's not paid attention to. And there's lots of sort of debates about what is the slow violence that we can deal with. And sort of the question is, what are the ways in which Sikh women are represented that may be outside violence, that have to do with pleasures, that have to do with love, that have to do with all kinds of other parts of everyday life, right? That we try to keep free of violence. So the question of the slow violence, one way to think about it is a question that few people talk about in India, which is property, inheritance. Sort of the slow violence of dispossession that happens in the lives of women. Sort of the women who are left behind are often bereft of property. And how are they living? How are they living their lives? What do we do with that? So an inheritance and law is only one way in which we can think of the slow violence, right? There are many, many other ways in which we can think of Sikh women's lives, ordinary lives. What happens? How is migration changing in the villages? If you go back to villages in Punjab, they're completely changed over the last 20, 30 years. How are we tracking what's happening in the villages? What's happening to the lives of women in those villages as they relocate to urban centers, right? massive amounts of urban migration that's going on. So we have some ways, there's that the diaspora work has been really groundbreaking and I think really, really important to begin to track this. But there's much less on women in Punjab and in India as well. There's a whole long history of women's education in Punjab, which is really, really long. In my village, the women's high school has been there for over 100 years, right? And we don't have any history of that. There's more work to be done there as well. So these are women, Punjabi and Sikh women, were in the forefront of educational reform through the 20th century. And we don't have good histories of those as well, right? So there's so much work to be done, and much of our work ends up being focused on this eruptive violence, which is important, but there's other work also that needs to be done. So I'm really interested in seeing if, you know, we can generate communities and students, people who are really invested in doing this work, right? Or in understanding masculinities in very different ways. So how do we begin to theorize Sikh patriarchy? Is there a Sikh patriarchy? How do we begin to think the kind of notion of equality in Sikhism? What is it in, sort of, how is it interpreted? How is it in practice? How is it in culture? What do we understand about it? How are different kinds of masculinities emerging in the Sikh community, in diaspora, in Punjab, in different diaspora's? The Southeast Asian diaspora, people who went to Fiji, people who went to Hong Kong, there are massive communities, people in the Gulf, people in the Caribbean, there are people in Argentina, there are Sikh communities in Argentina, in Salta, in the middle of Argentina, there's a big, large Sikh community. So how do we begin to understand what are the kinds of flourishing, what are the kinds of masculinities, femininities, various, which is more powerful than the other, right? Is Jat masculinity? What is Jat masculinity? It's extremely powerful in Punjab. How do we begin to understand how that power is maintained? Right? Certainly we have stories about that, but there's much, much work to be done. And I'll end with just one worry and one caution. There's a lot of policing that goes on in academia. It goes on in communities. This is kind of the part of community that is really a problem for us scholars of communities. Like communities are produced by inclusion, but they're also produced by exclusion, right? And the exclusions can be difficult and very, very worrisome. And so the exclusions have to be paid attention to. The boundary making practices are really important. So the exclusions in sort of scholarly work have been really worrisome, I think, in recent decades. The ways in which people in the community police scholarly work and say, well, this is right and this is not right, or this is good work and this is not, and they really police the people who they disagree with, right, and try to shut down scholarly work. This happens, this is not unusual to the Sikh community, right? Right now, Modi is in the practice of developing the Hindutva version of Indian history, and we know that that's coming, right? And that's a big, big concern now for many of us in Scotland, in academia. But if I had one idea, I would wish for Sikh feminists to be critical of these practices of policing. It is against sort of feminism, but very normal for it also, to be sort of so much involved in questions about who can speak and how they can speak. And that is a really critical issue for us to deal with. In academia, many, many scholars have been policed. Sikh scholars have been policed for not doing the right kind of work. And I think that as a community, we should support any kind of work. We may not agree with it, we may disagree with it, but that's scholarly inquiry. And if we are against critical, engaged work, we will not do ourselves any favors, right, as a community. We have to be open. We have to produce scholarship that we may disagree with. We have to produce scholarship that is critical, right? That is engaged, that comes from very different parts of the community, and that is really important. So for all of you who are thinking of going into academia, please, we need you very much in doing academic work. Go do PhDs, become professors anywhere in India, in different parts of the world. But be loud, be really loud, be critical, be unafraid. Don't be afraid to step on people's toes, on the community's toes, on anybody's toes. That's your work as a feminist, right? To be critical and to be engaged. Thank you.